What an awesome way to start, though, with that story. A perfect icebreaker. Well, I've given my testimony many times, and it's always been different. I never wrote it down, and I've never said it the same way. But I always like to start at the beginning, and that's when I was born. Right? And then I take it from there. I was born, and I was born addicted. I was addicted so bad when they cut the umbilical cord, my body went into DTs. And the DTs were so severe that they had to jumpstart me. And that was back in 1969. And they didn't know much about, what it was like to have, kids that were born that way. So it was pretty severe, and they thought that I'd have severe brain damage, which, as you get to hearing me talk, I'll be going down rabbit trails and trying to, share the best I can, what happened, but... something a little wrong with me. And I blame that, but God's really done a work in me, and I want to share that tonight on how he's used all for good, and that really means what the Lord said. So born addicted, and went through life not knowing what was going to throw at me. I was put up for adoption, and I got adopted by a lady here in Fort Wayne who took in kids that had challenges. And all my brothers and sisters have some kind of mental or physical disability, and I was not the only one. There was 12 of us. So I consider her an angel to this day. She's 96 years old, and she's at Greystone off of DuPont, and I try to see her every week, but she's suffering from dementia, and I don't know how long we're going to have her, but I just praise God that she got a chance to see me get my life together, and I'll talk about that tonight. I'll try to fit that in. So came here to Fort Wayne, and as I was going through school, I had some very serious behavioral problems due to just the way I was, and I acted out all the time, very hyper, very strong-willed, but I was my mom's favorite, she spoiled me rotten. I tried to do a lot of learning at a young age, and getting into everything that I possibly could. It was a Christian home, and my mom and my dad were devout Christians, and they did their best to instill Christian values into our home and into our lifestyle. We prayed. I had discipline. We talked about God, and that was all fine and dandy, but I just didn't want any of it then, I had adventure on my mind at all times, and my first addiction came in the form of sugar. And I got a taste of sugar, and I started obsessing over it. I started craving it, and before long, I started fulfilling my desires of indulging as much of it as possibly humanly capable of doing. So, to to take it, I would just take a cup of it and just into my mouth and let it dissolve, you know. My mom would find cups of sugar with crusted to the thing underneath my bed or in my closet, you know. I craved it, you know, and so I couldn't go into any stores or restaurants. I'd take all the sugar, you know, put it in my pocket, and I'd go around eating sugar packets all day and just letting it dissolve in my mouth and spitting them. But, you know, super hyperactive, you know. I was jacked on sugar. I mean, as young as I can remember. And, for a 5-year-old, you know, and, of course that led to, you know, some pretty serious behavioral problems in schools, and, they couldn't, control me, my mom could hardly control me. I got tested for a bunch of different allergies, and, they tried to work with therapists, and, you know, I was just, all my wires were twisted, and they put me on, you know, different medications, Ritalin being one of the main ones. But I never knew a difference of taking the medicine. Sometimes I'd take it, sometimes I didn't, you know. I'd make it a game, you know, with, not taking my medicine. Doesn't do anything for me anyway, so. I caught my first criminal case at 11 years old. I was throwing an axe at the neighbor's tree in her backyard, and that started my, you know, criminal career. About that time, I got caught stealing from a Handy Andy store. I went in with a newspaper bag and just started filling it up with candy. You know, I was always stealing candy, and finally I got caught. So, you know, like I said, at 11 years old, I was starting a paper trail. The juvenile officer had all these rules stipulated, and I just had fun manipulating and, you know, seeing how far I could push it. What are you going to do? You know, whatever. And ended up eventually I was going to court to be ruled incorrigible at 13, and as an alternative, I got put in a boys home in Marion, New Horizons, and that was a high structured home, and it was faith-based, so they did good with me, and it was a big impact on me. I felt like when I was started to mature because of what I was made to do there, and I liked it. I liked being in the nature. I liked work, and it was a way for me to focus my energies, you know, and so that was good. That's where I experienced substances. And once I experienced, you know, alcohol and weed, the craving that I had for sugar then turned towards that stuff. And by the time I got done with the boys home, I was a full-blown addict of different stuff. Weed, meth, they call it crank, and LSD, you know, 14, 15 years old, you know, I had tried it all, but my main thing was alcohol and weed, you know, at a younger age, but that led to criminal activities, and I ended up catching a burglary as a juvenile, and I did some time in juvie, and then I went to violated that, and I went to Indiana Boys School. So I already had you know, extensive incarceration before I hit 18. And when I was 18, well, actually, when I was 17, I caught a felony case for burglary. And I'm trying to think, I got put on probation, but then right after I turned 18, I violated my probation. So that landed me in prison. That was a burglary and a possession case. So my probation was for 8 years. And they, since they violated me, I got, you know, an 8 year sentence as an 18-year-old. And then for the charge, they gave me 2 years. So that was 10 years altogether at 18. So I went ahead and if I would have went to prison and did what I was supposed to do, back then they had the thing called shock probation. But because my behavior was so bad when I went to prison, that I ended up not getting any kind of leeway, and instead I ended up stretching my time out. And so on a 10-year bit, I did 6.5 years when I could have got out in 48 months or at least 5 years. So that was back in 1990, so I got out in 96, and in 96 I stayed clean for about a month, and I was already so bad within 6 months that I had caught another charge and I was on the run, and they caught me in 1998, and I ended up getting a 42. And then got out and stayed sober for a while, and then ended up going back in 2003. And during that time, that's when I took off on the run into Florida and traveled with the circus. And that was a story all in itself. But came back, did some more time. Let's see here. I think it was, I can't remember if it was 90 or 2008 or 2010. I got out, caught a case in 2011, and that is where God got me on my knees. It was my fourth time. I went back to RDC, and it was on a drug case, and it was for methamphetamines. And I felt like I was on the verge of dying in prison. And the sad thing was, is, you know, I was put, I had done so much in my life to where I numbed myself and I thought that incarceration was the only way to, you know, live. And I hadn't even really spent any time enjoying life. In my first incarceration, my daughter was born. I hadn't taken any time in 20 years, you know, in and out to get to know her and involve myself in her life. And, you know, all my brothers and sisters had done turned their back on me because I had screwed them all over. And, in some type of way, you know, brought pain and misery into their lives. And In 2011, I sat in that cell, and I just broke down. And God was really working on me in jail, because I sat in jail for 8 months. I thought I had a chance on beating the case. And during that time, it was the most traumatic time in my life. I swear that my hair wasn't gray before then, but by the time in a year, I looked like an old man. And I felt like it too, and I really thought that my life was over. And I was tired, sick and tired. My mom, she was still there for me though. I remember she came to court with a walker, and she asked my lawyer if she could say something. I mean, they already knew what they were going to do. They knew the amount of time that they were going to give me, and I took a plea bargain for 12 years. And so there wasn't much that she could say, you know, that was going to change her mind. But she wanted to anyways. And she hobbled up there on the stand, and she pleaded to the judge about, you know, how I was born addicted and how this wasn't, you know, going to help me, and how I needed some treatment. And not to go to prison again, because at that time I was a career criminal and I'd spent over half my life in and out of prison. And I looked at the judge as she was talking, and he was going through some papers, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, this is amazing what I'm seeing and what kind of happened to me. I felt Christ's love through my mom pleading for my life, you know, just to give me a chance to the Father, you know. And I mean, that wasn't what's happening, but I thought about how God had continued to love me through all my crap that I had been through. And he had kept me alive, you know, as I was playing with my life and not thinking. I felt like he would give me a chance with my family if I could get my life together. And I was, you know, 48, and I didn't know how he was going to do it, but it all, it was in an instant, kind of hit me, you know. And I was like, well, gosh, man, God really does love me. And, you know, here a lady who didn't even birth me, you know, is loving me like I'm her own, and she's always stood by me, you know, and continues to do so when everybody else had turned their back on me. So that was the closest representation that I had witnessed about love, you know, because all as growing up, I don't think I really had a comprehension of love or even cared, you know. So I had an understanding of love then, and I had some very miraculous things happen to me that people that were coming into my life at the time, coming into the jail and sharing about Jesus' love and how he died for us on the cross, and how we were all sinners and we were all going to hell, and but there was saving grace and God did this, and it was just impactful for me. And I mean, I'd heard it all my life, but it didn't make any sense until I had that experience about, you know, sacrifice, you know, and how Jesus was sacrificed on the cross for us, you know. And that was just the start. And I just got down on my knees and I rededicated my life November 4th, 2011. I was in RDC down in Indianapolis, and I proceeded on to do my sentence of 12 to 6, and I got out in 2016. But during that time, it was different. You know, I'd done a lot of time and I had a lot of respect because of all the time that I did with the convicts, but I didn't just do time. I spent the time growing closer to God. I spent the time trying to reprogram my mind. And I grabbed onto a verse in Romans, Romans 12, 1 and 2. Do not conform to the patterns of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. And I knew that was the only way that I was really going to make it and change my criminal thinking, was letting God do that thing. You know, because I'm a sinner, and I was born that way, and I was born, you know, just to do my flesh desires, but God wanted something different for me, and so he saved me, and now I spent that time just learning what he wanted, because here I was kind of suffering from hopelessness and figuring, you know, the pattern that I had created in my life was I get high, I have a good time, and then I go to prison, and then I'm okay because I learn how to survive in there and get high, and I get out, and that's what life is, you know, just in and out, and getting high. And so I was retraining my brain through growing my relationship with Jesus Christ and finding out what the different plan was. And during that time, I started receiving a newsletter from Inspiration Ministries. And in that, the letter from the editor was Andy Foster. And he's the president of Inspiration Ministries, where I am now. And in one of the letters, he said that he felt that Jesus Christ was the CEO of his ministry. And that just stuck with me. It resonated with me. And it kept going over in my head, you know. And that night, as I was praying to God, I prayed that if I was to be a part of something, and if he had a plan for me, that it would be something that he was the CEO of. Because I was tired of doing what I wanted to do. And so I felt like in 2016 that I was led to Inspiration Ministries, because I thought that I would just kind of help out there. And I tried to come here to Fort Wayne to my mom's house, but my grandson was staying there. And I got released on CTP, and that's a community corrections thing. Well, some of you guys probably know what that is. So I was on community corrections, and I got out, and I was waiting for my sister to pick me up, and then I got taken back in. Crazy story is it turns out that I couldn't be there doing DOC time while a kid was under child protection, and my grandson was there. My daughter had lost custody, and so I couldn't be there at the same time. So God led me up to Auburn, where I went into a halfway house up there called Serenity House. And that's how I got connected to Inspiration Ministries, though. I was really discouraged and, you know, and frustrated because I had already made a plan for 5 years that I was going to do the right thing, and I was going to be, you know, a grandpa to my, you know, grandson, and a father to my kid, and a son to my mom, and here I wasn't allowed to go there. But he knew what he was doing. I went to Auburn, and that's where Inspiration Ministries is. And if I would have came here to Fort Wayne, I don't know that I ever would have made it up there because of my ties to addiction. So I started going to these small groups, Inspiration Ministries. They were a small men's group. And Andy was going to it. And he approached me one night, and he asked me, he said, I'm thinking about getting a house. I want you to be a manager. And I'm like, Andy, I'm a career criminal. I'm not a house manager, you know. And I don't think I'd be really, I'll help you, you know, cut the grass or trim trees or something like that, but I'm not, you know. He said, don't answer me now. He's like, you go home, you pray about it, and then you let me know. I went and told my mom, and I felt again like God was speaking through my mom, and she said that she thought right off the bat that she thought it'd be the best thing for me. And I really feel like she was right. I feel in my heart that she was right. And I'll tell you a little bit about it if I don't run out of time. I went back and I told Andy, I was like, yeah, man, I'll try it. You know, I don't know, you know, if you think that I got what it takes. So he's like, I know you do. He knew that I had a desire to stay off drugs and that I needed some way to focus my direction. And my mom did too, you know. And my plan was to get my CDLs, get sober, and travel, you know, really see the world. And that's what my desire was. But God had a different desire for me. And the sites that I have been able to see, they can't, the Rockies don't hold a sight to the miracles that I've had a chance to see. Being in the trenches of recovery and seeing families be reunited. My first resident, a gentleman, he went through our program 9 months, and he graduated. He rebuilt his relationship with his mother, his daughter, and his ex-girlfriend was in another relationship, but he had two twin little babies there, 2 years old. He called them his little kings. And he was being a father to them and helping support them, spending time with them. He graduated our program, and he had moved in with his daughter and was helping her in her broken relationship that she had just got out of, and he was getting his kings regularly. 6 months after he graduated our program, he died in his sleep, and it was tragic. It was tragic. But it was wonderful at the same time because he was able to leave this world, and he had repaired his relationship with his mother and his kids, and they got a chance to experience good memories instead of losing them when he was lost in his addiction. So that's been driving me, you know, for years. And that was my first resident. Our success numbers were good, but as you know, there's not a lot of success in recovery, and I know from my own experience. But God's put me in a position to where I can use my past experiences of failures for good. And I stand as an example to these guys that I get in my program of what it looks like, you know, and try to lift them up and give them hope. And you know, a couple years ago, the best thing happened to me. I found a wonderful woman, and I never thought I was going to find a good woman. All I had experienced in life was to use a woman, you know, and not to love her. So I am so thankful that God has given me that. And what a job God was doing when he created marriage, because I'd live life selfish. And I always thought of myself, even, you know, coming up. And then when I got married, I realized that I was a selfish guy. And here I thought, you know, I'd worked all these years on being a godly man. But then when I got into marriage, I realized that it wasn't just me, and how to, you know, think about her. And, you know, I'm still doing that. But it's exciting. It's exciting to learn and grow and to share a life with a woman who loves me too, you know. And that was just amazing. So God's been working on me, and he's been using all my past to work towards giving these guys hope. I got 15 guys in the house right now. It's a full house. We got another house across the street getting ready to open up. And it's going to be filled up rather quick. We got a waiting list. And it's a wonderful opportunity for the guys that want it, and that they're able to, you know, be at a place in their life that they want, you know, what we got to offer. So I'm thankful that God's put me in that position. I've gained a certain amount of patience and tolerance for people that are going through the addiction that I value greatly. I can't even believe my own responses. Sometimes I feel like just yelling and screaming, but somehow Christ's calm comes through, and I'm able to work through some very difficult situations, and I'm thankful for that. And I give God all the glory for, you know, how He's worked in me. Yes. One of the things that has helped me in my walk was finding people that I can put in my life that hold me accountable. That has been the most valuable thing. I have accountability in my job, for one thing, that keeps me on point. And then I put mentors in my life. I have two mentors right now. I meet with them weekly. And we try to stay on that spiritual level, you know, and let them just hold me accountable. So I encourage all you guys, if you get anything out of this, to have somebody in your life that you can have hold you accountable. And I also encourage you to always be on a search for that, to be in that environment that is uplifting, and to try to continue to foresee to put yourself in that. I still got 5 minutes, right?
I don't know. Mark Marvin, does he?
Yeah. Huh?
How much time does he got?
How much time do you need?
Well, I want to share something.
5 minutes?
I want to share something that is impactful to let you know that Jesus Christ has been directing my life, and that I'm living within His will. This is a very cool story. So when I first started with Inspiration Ministries, I managed out of a schoolhouse out in the country. And we outgrew it very quickly. And we needed a bigger house, and the house that we're in now, we call the farm, came up for auction. And I got told about this, that it come up for auction, and I freaked out. It turns out that this place was a Cray apple orchard, and Mrs. Cray was my first grade teacher here in Fort Wayne. And on top of that, she kept in touch with me for years. Like, I came down here, I was in first, and I got held back, and I was in second. And since I had behavioral problems, I was always up by the desk, and my desk was right next to her desk, you know. So wherever I act out, she just reached out, you know. It's kind of, so, but we had a relationship, a friendship that was pretty cool. And so when we moved to Garrett, she stayed in touch with me, and I remember being very frustrated, being homeschooled, and I told my mom, I said, I'm going to write Mrs. Cray a letter. So I wrote her a letter back then, 1984, and I told her, I said, you know, Mrs. Cray, one day I'm going to come live with you. And I didn't think about it for years and years, but Mrs. Cray, she kept in touch with me through my incarceration, and sent me birthday cards and Christmas cards, and always encouraged me and said God had special something for me. So when we found out that her farm was come up for auction, and I was working for a ministry that could possibly buy it, I was pretty excited. So long story short, we went to auction. We ended up getting the property. I went up to Mrs. Cray. She's in a nursing home in Kendallville. And I went up there to thank her, you know, for just the opportunity to be living there. And she said that she had something for me. Can you imagine what she had for me?
Deed to the property.
Huh?
Deed to the property.
No. No. She had sitting on her bed the letter that I had written to her all those years. Can you believe that? And I have it in my office. I have it in a picture frame. But in that letter, I told her that I was going to come live there. And to me, right then, that was God telling me he knew what I was going to do before I did, way back when I was still a snot. So that's been very encouraging me for me to get that sign, because I didn't know where I was going in life. I didn't know what I was doing. But I knew once I give the wheel to God and that he directed my path, he led me right to where I want to go. And my days are full. I get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and I get these guys and I'm energized to help them through whatever problem that they have, to try to, you know, give them some guidance and to be at the helm and to have some discernment of who wants it, who doesn't, you know, because I've been there and I know if you want it, you're going to let me know some kind of way. So I'm questioning them, I'm communicating and I'm with them every day. And if they got something going on, I could smell it. I could smell it if they, you know, feeling some type of way. So God's really got me in the right place. And I know that he can do that for you because I'll tell you what, I'm a wreck. I don't know nothing. But God knows everything. And he worked in my life. And I'm glad that I have an opportunity to share that with you guys here. There is a bunch of stuff I left out. But like I said, come tune in to the next time. It'll be a little different. You know, my life's been very colorful. God's blessed me with a great testimony. And I want to thank you guys for being a great audience and listening.